Hello and welcome to Tech Shots with me, Akshayaram Krishna, where we talk about science, technology, tech reviews and more. This is episode 2. Apple's face shields, Zoom bombing, bite-size entertainment and the OnePlus 8 Pro. Let's start where we left off in the last episode, COVID-19. Apple is designing and shipping face shields for medical workers on the front lines of this fight. In a video posted on Twitter, CEO Tim Cook said, "Teams across Apple have been working on ways we can support our heroic frontline medical professionals," and went on to share two updates. Number one, the number of masks Apple has been able to source through their supply chain has touched 20 million around the world. He said that this was a truly global effort and stated that Apple has been working continuously and closely with the governments at all levels to ensure that these are donated to places of greatest need. Number two, Cook also said that Apple has launched a company-wide effort bringing together product designers, engineering, operations, packaging teams, and their suppliers to design, produce, and ship face shields for health workers. He said that the first shipment was delivered to the Kaiser Hospital facilities in the Santa Clara Valley, and they were very positive feedback from doctors. Each box contains about 100 shields, packed flat, and each shield can be assembled in less than 2 minutes and is fully adjustable. Cook said, while demonstrating how it works, he also said that Apple plans to ship 1 million of these this week and over 1 million per week after that, first in the US and subsequently beyond the US. He highlighted the unique ways in which Apple can help in meeting essential needs of caregivers urgently and at a scale the circumstances require, while emphasizing on the fact that for Apple, this was a labor of love, gratitude, and they will share more updates and more of their efforts over time. So Apple are doing their bit towards this effort to contain the virus. Let's do ours. In other tech news, Eric S. Yuan, the CEO of Zoom, has responded to security and privacy concerns, saying we had some missteps. Appearing before a background that said we care over an image of a heart-shaped planet Earth, Yuan said to CNN on Sunday that despite the company's recent security problems, its intentions are good. Here he is talking to CNN's Brian Stelter.
Our service was built to serve business and a lot of enterprise customers. However, during this COVID-19 crisis, we moved too fast. Our intention to serve the end users of the K-12 schools. However, we had some missteps. We should have done something to enforce password and waiting room and double check every server settings. But over the past 1 week and 2 weeks, we already took actions to fix those missteps. Because the new user cases is very different to our traditional business and enterprise customers where they have IT team to support.
Now, what about when I take my three-year-old to preschool on Zoom and she sees all her friends? Is that connection secure or can other people spy on it?
No, that connection is secure. Make sure but you enable your password and make sure others cannot hack into the meeting and make sure you enable the meeting room, waiting room feature. I think we have all those security features built in. And however, we need to focus on education. We should enforce those settings for the brand new users, especially for consumers. And that's what we have done recently.
Mm. What are the most interesting uses of Zoom that you've seen in the past few weeks? To me, it's these religious services. Today is Palm Sunday. Passover is coming up. Ramadan is later in the month of April. And we're seeing so many houses of worship hold services on Zoom.
Yeah, that's right. We received a lot of new use cases. This is one of them, like a happy hour as well, and all kinds of new use cases. But the user base are very different to our traditional enterprise customers.
You know, there's also been, speaking of enterprise customers, the New York City Board of Education said it's not going to have schools use Zoom because of the concerns about privacy and security. Are you seeing a lot of those cases of people all of a sudden backing out and not using the platform?
No, actually, we are still in the process to work together with New York school, New York schools, because they are reevaluating that. So make sure we do already, you know, enforce those security settings, make sure Zoom bombing will not happen again. We are still in the process to work together with them.
You're working on it. And Eric, what's the most important thing users should know?
Zoom, we take actions quickly, and we had some missteps over the past 2 weeks, and our intention is good. Now we learn lesson, and we double down, triple down on privacy and security before we do anything. We need to think about that. You know, rather than just, you know, care about the customer, service them, we need to take a step back, focus on privacy and security. We want Zoom to be the privacy security first company.
Privacy security first company.
Sure, let's believe that. That was Yuan in an interview following a tumultuous few weeks for the video conferencing platform. Despite this, however, Zoom has seen its usage increase dramatically as people working from their homes have used this to stay in touch and work. Yuan said in a blog post on April 1st that the company reached 200 million daily meeting participants in March, which is up from 10 million daily meetings in December 2019. That's a staggering growth of 20x in 3 months. Zoom has been in the news lately for all the wrong reasons after Zoom bombing, where unwanted participants can invade a meeting. It has been inundated with security issues to a point that the company said on April 2nd that it was pausing all feature updates for the next 90 days to focus exclusively on privacy and security. These security concerns have prompted some of the companies and schools to conduct meetings and classes using rival service Teams from Microsoft. Yuan also insisted that the team at Zoom is working closely with schools and companies to win back their trust. We'll only have to wait and see how it goes for them. Moving on. Now, we've all heard of bite-sized news or bite-sized music, but have you heard of a bite-sized video streaming app? That's exactly what two people thought. Jeffrey Katzenberg, the former CEO of Walt Disney DreamWorks Animation, and Meg Whitman, the former CEO of HP and eBay, they thought of building Quibi, a short, bite-sized, mobile-only original programming streaming service with the tagline, "Watch in 10 minutes or less." After investing nearly $1 billion in star power and content production, Quibi is about to find out whether consumers are willing to pay $4.99 with ads or $7.99 for an ad-free version. These two tiers are available only in the US, and for India, they haven't localized the pricing at all. They charged about 669 rupees a month. That is more than what Netflix charges for what has significantly less interesting content for now. However, bite-sized episodes isn't the only way Quibi is setting itself apart. Its content is conditioned for both portrait and landscape viewing. So no matter how you hold your device, you will never see any black bars on the screen. This works for offline viewing as well, which is cool. The app is designed well and offers a lot of customization in terms of limiting data usage, play settings, etc. It feels more like Instagram than Netflix in terms of its responsiveness, and my 3-year-old OnePlus 5 had no problems coping up. Launched on the 6th of April globally, featuring the likes of Jennifer Lopez, Sophie Turner, and Nick Jonas, Quibi offers a variety of content spanning mystery dramas, action thrillers, prank shows, cooking competitions, courtroom comedies, nature documentaries, late night dating, and even news. This service is mobile only, meaning no sharing profiles, no simultaneous viewing, and no viewing on a tablet or even on a computer. Add to that the high pricing. I reckon Quibi might find it difficult to get traction in India. And even if you've convinced a small section of the English speaking population in the country, Quibi is currently offering a 90-day trial period, but you're not likely to find anyone squandering to pay. I know I won't be. OnePlus is about to launch the OnePlus 8 Pro, and it has been making quite a roar recently in the tech world for its rumored specs. A new report has surfaced online, somewhat confirming its leaked specs. Slated to be launched on the 14th of April, OnePlus 8 Pro just surfaced on the benchmarking tool Geekbench 5. From this, we know that the phone will run on the Snapdragon 865 chipset with two specifications: an 8GB RAM model with 128GB of storage, or a 12GB RAM model with 256GB of internal storage with UFS 3.0. It will feature a 6.78-inch 120Hz Fluid AMOLED display, 1440 by 3120 pixel with 507 pixels per inch density, meaning that it'll have a super bright, super colorful display for a butter smooth scrolling experience with no lag at all. The display will be protected by a Corning Gorilla Glass 6 on the front and a Gorilla Glass 5 at the back, which makes it durable and shatterproof, as claimed by OnePlus. Coming to the camera situation, it will feature a quad camera setup, a 48MP 25mm wide-angle camera with omnidirectional laser AF, an 8MP telephoto lens with 3x optical zoom, a 48MP ultra-wide camera, and a 5MP camera for depth effect. It will be capable of shooting up to 2160p at 30 or 60 frames per second. There is also a single 16MP wide-angle selfie camera with auto HDR as well. It'll feature no headphone jack and will house two stereo speakers. There's also an under-display optical fingerprint reader, a non-removable 4510mAh battery with fast wireless charging with USB Type-C 3.1. All in all, a pretty significant package which will give the Samsung Galaxy S20 Ultra a run for its money. And this being a OnePlus product, we expect it to be aggressively priced, which will make it a very compelling package. Next up, Sony has revealed the new DualSense controller for the PlayStation 5, which marks the biggest departure from Sony's controller design in its over 25-year history of the PlayStation consoles. There are a host of new features like haptic feedback, which replaces the rumble technology in the old controllers, and adaptive triggers that can adjust the resistance of triggers for different gameplay effects. The biggest feature for me, however, is the inclusion of a long overdue USB Type-C port. Finally. Oh, and there's also a two-tone color scheme as opposed to the traditional single color scheme in the earlier models. The haptic feedback that I spoke about earlier makes this new controller way more engaging to use, offering substantial feedback in accordance to the game you're playing. It also adds a variety of powerful sensations you will feel when you play, such as the slow grittiness of driving a car through the mud. They also have incorporated adaptive triggers into the L2 and the R2 buttons of the DualSense, so you can truly feel the tension of your actions, like when drawing a bow to shoot an arrow, for example. DualSense also adds a built-in microphone array, which will enable players to easily chat with friends without having to, you know, use a headset all the time. But of course, if you're planning to chat for a longer duration of time, it is good to have a headset handy. With that, we come to the end of this episode. What news from the tech world would you like to know about? What would you like to hear me review in the upcoming episodes? Let me know on Twitter, at TechShots5 is my Twitter handle. You can also write to me at tchshots@gmail.com with any requests or suggestions or comments. That's it for this one. Until the next one, stay safe and stay home. Peace.